Today FM's Dermot and Dave.
In the space of 1 week, Ireland has seen over 45,000 new cases of COVID, 87 deaths, and now more than 1,500 people are in hospital and 125 people are currently in ICU. Those numbers have quadrupled in just 2 weeks, and we're all being told to stay at home to stop the hospital system from becoming overwhelmed. So what happens now? We're joined this morning by Tánaiste Leo Varadkar. Good morning, Tánaiste.
Morning. Morning. Thanks for having me.
How are you?
Okay. It's interesting times and very worrying times as well. How are you?
Not so bad at the moment.
We're
yeah.
good, thanks. Obviously, like everybody else, we're looking at, you know, these rather alarming news reports, like, for instance, Letterkenny, where people were left waiting in ambulances outside the hospital because of the levels of COVID inside and the lack of staff. They weren't able to go inside. You know, we're even hearing across the border similar things happening in Enniskillen, where off-duty people were, staff were asked to come back in to help with the staff shortages. Is this the darkest month for the HSE with everything that's going on, do you think?
Well, I think it will be. And unfortunately, we're only 10 or 11 days into it. We are in the middle of what is a third wave of the pandemic. It is going to be worse than the first. On the upside, though, we're better prepared. We have PPE stockpiled. We have about 1,000 more beds than we had this time last year, more ICU capacity, more staff, testing and tracing capacity, and also we have a better idea how to treat COVID. We know what treatments work and which ones don't. But the situation is very serious. We have nearly 1,600 patients in hospital at the moment with COVID. Still have over 500 beds available across the system, and 127 in ICU with 38 available. Hospitals are very much under pressure, but are coping. The worry that we have is the situation is still deteriorating, because, you know, people who are being admitted to hospital now got this disease probably about 2 weeks ago, just after the Christmas period.
And given that everything you just said there, that we're better prepared, we've got more beds, we understand the disease, I suppose, is one of the most important things, the PPE and everything like that. Why is this wave so big by comparison to the first one?
I suppose when you compare the case numbers, you can't really compare them, because we didn't have mass testing in the first wave the way we have now. So we're testing 25, 30,000 people a day now. We're only testing a few thousand. So cases, it's hard to compare, but what definitely is worse, without doubt, is the number of people who are being hospitalized and the number of people who need to go to ICU. So it does appear to be worse. It's difficult to know why. You can never know for sure, but obviously there's the B117 variant at play. There was also a lot of social contact and a lot of people interacting over the Christmas period, and you know, that definitely has had a significant role to play in this. And also, I think it's becoming increasingly apparent that there's a seasonal component to COVID. You know, like most coronaviruses, it tends to be worse in the winter when the air is cold and the air is dry and people are indoors a lot. So I suppose that the positive you can take out of that is that when we do get to the spring and the weather improves, that will work in our favour. And also by then, we'll have a lot of people vaccinated, particularly those who we need to vaccinate the most. People in nursing homes, the staff there, the healthcare workers, people over 70 and 80. But that does mean between now and then, certainly the first 3 months of the year are going to be a very, very rocky period. And the best thing we can do to help out is to stay at home, if at all possible, to buy us some time so that we can get the vaccine to those who need it the most before the virus gets to them.
I want to get to the vaccine in a second, but, you know, the HSE is obviously stretched to its capacity. The hospitals are stretched to their capacity. There's a lot of people that don't have COVID, have other issues, some of them life-threatening. What reassurance do you have for people who are waiting on other essential healthcare that they'll actually be seen and treated?
Well, you know, the reassurance I'd give to people is that if you need urgent healthcare, if it's an emergency, if you're suffering from chest pain, you know, the symptoms of a stroke or a heart attack, don't be afraid to go to hospital. The emergency departments are all still open. Something we usually talk about this time of year is the trolley count. The trolley count today is 138. It's 70% lower than it was this time last year. So that just gives you an indication of the fact that while the hospitals are under a lot of pressure, particularly in some parts of the country, overall, there is capacity in the health service, over 500 empty beds. So people who are, you know, suffering from an emergency, think they may be experiencing, let's say, you know, symptoms of a stroke or heart attack, don't be afraid to go to hospital. Don't be afraid to use the emergency service, the ambulance service, because one of the things we really fear during this pandemic phase is people, you know, wanting to be good citizens, not wanting to bother the hospital and the doctors and nurses when they're so busy. But actually, those emergencies will be dealt with and have to be dealt with. And the same thing goes, for example, for cancer clinics and people who need investigations quickly. On the downside, though, there are people who are on waiting lists. They're waiting a very long time for procedures and operations, tests that they need. And
there's people with cancer who are very concerned at the moment.
Yeah, well, cancer care is being prioritized. So, you know, whether it's an operation that you need to get a tumor removed, let's say, or whether you have a breast lump and you need that investigated, all that is going ahead. And part of the deal we now have with the private hospitals allows us to use their facilities so that we can use the public facilities dedicated to COVID. So again, when it comes to those types of things, people will get the healthcare that they need and they get it in a timely fashion. But that does mean that some other things, which are also important and need to be done, are going to be put off. And that's the sad truth of it. Sorry, that is the case, but we do need to free up capacity for COVID. And also we need to bear in mind that if people are relatively well, it's probably not a good idea to bring them into hospitals at the moment, given that there's so much COVID in the hospitals and some of the staff have COVID, for example, but don't know that yet.
Let's talk about the vaccine for a second. You mentioned it there a few minutes ago. I mean, there are lots of questions like, you know, the vaccine's being, you know, done between 10 and 5 every day. Why not 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, etc., that kind of stuff. What is the situation with the vaccine rollout now? You spoke about getting it to the vulnerable and those in care homes and obviously the HSE staff and all that. But what is the rollout plan at the moment?
Okay, so a little bit of a slow start, but it is now well underway, and it is being accelerated. So last week our target was to vaccinate 35,000 people. We exceeded that target. They were almost all healthcare workers and people in nursing homes. This week we're ramping it up to 40,000, mainly again residents of nursing homes. Now the reason why we're doing nursing home staff and residents first is over half the deaths in the first wave were, you know, people in nursing homes. So even though it's only a small percentage of the population, it could actually reduce the death rate in half. And then, of course, moving on to the healthcare workers, who obviously we need to keep well and need to protect and are very exposed to the virus. So by the end of January, we'd anticipate having all the nursing home residents and staff done. By mid-February, they'd have their second dose. And then healthcare workers, again, very much underway. And we'd anticipate in March or April that at that point we would be going out to GPs, pharmacies, vaccination centres, covering the over 70s. Those are chronic illnesses. We know that GPs and pharmacies can do about 100,000 vaccines a week, which is a huge number. That's what they do during the flu season with the flu vaccine. The problem is we don't have the actual vaccines, and there is a limit in supply, and that will improve. But the only constraint that we have at the moment is just the supply of vaccines.
Do you think it's happening fast enough, the rollout?
You know, it can't happen much faster. That's the truth of it. I know there are some countries that are ahead of us, you know, like Israel, for example, and the UK at the moment. Most countries in the world haven't even started their vaccination program yet. You know, we're in the top 20, but obviously we aspire to do better. And the difficulty we have is that, you know, only two vaccines have been approved. Only one, the Pfizer one, is currently available in the European Union. But I think that will change a lot. You know, there's a good chance that the AstraZeneca one, which is the Oxford one, will be approved by the end of the month. And we could get to the point, you know, if we get lucky, or if we're not lucky, but if that is approved, where we can scale things up even more in February and actually get ahead of where we plan to be. But, you know, we've based our plans on supply of vaccine that we know is available, rather than supplies of vaccines that we project might become available.
Right.
And you will see some countries that have gone very fast at the start now having to slow down or pause because they've run out of vaccines, and we've decided to do it a slightly different way.
Well, obviously we put in our social media yesterday that you were coming in, and one of the questions that I got asked a lot by private message was, when are the general public going to get the vaccine? Obviously the vast majority of us are that. We're just normal humans going around our business. We're not, don't have any particular reason to get it before anyone else. But have you any idea when that might roll out?
Yeah, it's going to be after Easter most likely. I suppose it depends what you mean by general public, but if you mean people who are generally well and under 65, it'll be after Easter, realistically. Through the GP surgeries, pharmacies, we're going to have about 15 mass vaccination centres around the country too. We have 10 million doses ordered. They just haven't arrived yet, so we'll have enough for everyone. It will be free. It will not be compulsory. But bear in mind, there's a reason why this is done, being done in a priority order. If you look at who has died of COVID, over 90%, actually close to 98%, are people who are over 70 or people under 70 with a chronic illness. So if we vaccinate all of those people first, we can reduce the death rate by 98%, and we can reduce the number of people being hospitalized by a very big figure too. So that's the kind of game changer, you know. So in the same way as we don't vaccinate absolutely everyone against the flu every year, we prioritize those most at risk, and that's actually benefits everyone, if that makes sense.
Will teachers be vaccinated earlier?
They will, but they'll be in. At the moment they're most likely to be in group six. Largely because obviously it's different. Of course, if you're a teacher who has a chronic illness, they would be prioritised. But
would it not make sense to vaccinate the teachers sooner so that we can start to get schools back up and running, and then homes can find a bit more balance and get things moving that way?
It certainly makes sense to count them as essential workers, because they are, and we want to get schools back up and running. So it does make sense to prioritise them, but it doesn't actually make sense to prioritise them over other frontline workers who are just at risk or more at risk. You know, for example, our Gardaí are people who are working in supermarkets, you know, bus drivers, lots of people who are going to work at the moment because they have to, because they're essential workers who would be at just as high a risk, if not a higher risk, than teachers.
Just looking at other things that are going on outside of COVID at the moment, there's obviously great upset amongst people waiting on the report into mother and baby homes. That elements of the report were leaked to the Sunday Independent yesterday, and Minister for Children Roderick O'Gorman has said there'll be an investigation. Would you support an investigation into that leak?
I would, absolutely, yeah. And, you know, there are people who are survivors of mother and baby homes. They're waiting 5 years for this report, and I think it was very disrespectful, the fact that elements of it were leaked and appeared in a Sunday paper. You know, these are the people who deserve to see this report before everyone else, and that hasn't happened. Aspects of it were in the papers, not all of it, thankfully, but the plan tomorrow is that we're going to discuss at a cabinet, and immediately after that Minister Gorman and the Taoiseach are going to meet with survivors and survivor groups so that they see the report before it's published, and then we want to give them time to read it because it's a really big report. I had it over the Christmas break. It took me a day really to read it because it's very, very long and very well done. I have to say the people who drew it up were very thorough, but I think we then need to hear from the survivors themselves and, you know, ask them to guide us as to how we can best respond to it.
Just getting back to schools, special needs has been, on everybody's minds this week, because there's families listening right now who are at home with children who have special needs, who they find it very difficult to care for. They need those schools and resources that are generally available to them. They're not available now. A lot of them are feeling abandoned. What would you say to them?
Yeah, well, you know, I understand that, and, you know, really feel for them. One of the things we actually regretted doing back in the first phase, the first wave of the pandemic, was fully closing schools, because other countries didn't. You know, Germany, Denmark kept them open, even up in Northern Ireland, and in Britain they kept them open for kids with special needs, vulnerable kids in particular, and it is still government policy. You know, what we wanted to do was to keep the special schools open, special classes open, the schools open for vulnerable children. We still want to do that. It's the right thing for children. We don't want them to regress. It's the right thing for parents who, you know, really need the schools open to help them cope and manage. And it is consistent with the public health advice that we're getting from the doctors. So we have a job of work to do. Minister Foley and Minister Madigan are working on this at the moment. meeting with the disability NGOs, you know, like Down Syndrome Ireland and Inclusion Ireland, as I am, and particularly meeting with the management bodies and the unions and convincing them that it is safe to allow the special schools and the special classes to reopen. And that's our policy. We just have to convince the management and the unions that this is the right thing to do too.
Let's hope that happens soon. People are struggling in this lockdown. I think we can all see it. Are we looking at the end of the month for this to lift and for things to change?
That's hard to say, to be very frank. The government will, you know, review the situation again at the end of the month, and on the 30th of January we'll make some decisions for February. But, you know, I'm the Minister for Enterprises, you know, and what I'm saying to business people in particular is that if your business is not open, that you should be planning for the possibility that it mightn't open until the end of February, even the end of March.
So we could be looking at essentially two more months of this current state.
Yes, yeah. There may be some relaxation of restrictions, but I think they may be only very minor relaxations. Why do I say that? The numbers are very high. They are coming down, by the way. That's not showing up in the official figures yet, but it will in the next couple of days. But they're coming down from such a high level. And, you know, bear in mind, people only end up in hospital 2 weeks after they get infected. So, you know, even if the numbers are falling for 2 or 3 weeks, in 2 or 3 weeks' time, the hospitals are still going to be in quite a bad place. It's only then we're going to start seeing the numbers of people who've passed away showing up in the figures. And by then, we won't have the healthcare workers and people in the nursing homes vaccinated. And I think there's a very strong case to say to people, even though it's very hard medicine, let's stick with this. Let's get the numbers down very low. Let's take the pressure off our hospitals, and let's vaccinate a critical mass of people. Let's not take the risk in February of opening up and then seeing us end up in a fourth wave.
And
you know, let's make this the last lockdown if possible.
Yeah, that would be nice. Knowing what you know, when do you envisage life getting back to some kind of normality?
It's going to be a new normal. I don't think things are ever going to be exactly the way they were before. And, you know, there will be some things that are better than they were before. You know, things like remote working becoming mainstream. And I think we'll deal with flu seasons every year very differently than we did in the past. It's one of the remarkable features of this winter is there's no flu. First time in my lifetime that I can ever remember there not being a flu season, and that's because of the masks and the social distancing and the hand hygiene. So there are some things I think that we will always be with us to a certain extent. But I'd be optimistic. I think this summer is going to be a good summer. I'm not going to say it's a normal summer, but I think it is going to be a good one because we'll really see the effect of the vaccine take effect in the second quarter of this year, and also obviously we get into the better weather. So, I think we can look forward to a decent summer, and I think we can look forward to an economy really rebounding. I'm very conscious of the fact that there are 400,000 people, many of them listening to this program now, who are out of work or on the pandemic unemployment payment. I would see the vast majority of them back to work at some point between Easter and the summer.
Well, let's hope so. Tánaiste Leo Varadkar, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Have a good day. See you later.
Thank you. Thanks
for having me.
Dermot and Dave. Listen live on air from 9 a.m. weekdays on Today FM.